Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome to the Code. Welcome to the Code Breakers. This is Paradox. I got DC and T on the line with me, and we are here on the Black Talk Radio Network. We also streaming live on YouTube and Facebook Live. Fellas, are you there?
Greetings. Here.
Here as well.
All right. Today is January the 3rd, 2017. Some of the topics we're going to try to get to today is economic utopia. That is a question mark. Struggles living in the Americas. Military-civilian relationships. Should Africans in the Americas use capitalism on Africans who are suffering? Just did a quick description. Tonight we're going to discuss the only superpower on the planet, the group of people that determines your life and mine, the group of people that went and waged war at a global level in the early 1900s to obtain this power. And so that's just to touch on that. DC, did you have any just initial comments, or T, did you have any initial comments? Another part of that description is they also have used us to build this empire over the last 1,000 years or so. Just want to read a little bit of that description. Do y'all have any initial statements?
T, you want to go?
No, we can get right into it.
Go ahead. Let's go. Let's jump right in. Ready to rock and roll.
Well, the initial. I know T was going to. T, you can. I know we had some back and forth on using the word economic utopia as far as it being a sort of a loaded statement, I guess. It's not specific enough, so I want you to just kind of express the reason why I left it in there, just to kind of get your view on, you know, why is it such a large topic to discuss? Can we isolate it down to maybe one or two descriptions or opinions on on what that kind of means, or is it just too much to really just have a conversation with?
Definitely, it's a very expansive topic. The thing of it is that if you look at the, I'll just kind of give a quick overview as you stated, but if you look at the definition, there are a couple of different definitions. The one that stood out to me, based upon English, what has been transcribed out of English into the definition, since we're using their books ultimately in their language, which arguably could be made that is mine or yours, but it's a place of ideal perfection, especially in laws, government, and social conditions. That's one of the definitions. But another one is an impractical scheme social improvement. So I think because a lot of times we throw around justice or economic equality, but based upon what we're seeing out here, it's not happening. And I don't, that word utopia is not even really used, and most people would likely laugh at you or not even take you seriously if you mention the word utopia. So with that being said, I know we had touched on paradox, and I had touched on economic utopia. And is that even possible? Obviously, there are a lot of things that fall up under the word utopia, just based on the definition that I gave. And so, based upon those three things that I mentioned, as far as having perfection and laws, government, and social conditions, and we'll throw in economics to that, what are you guys' thoughts on that, just that expansive idea of a utopia? Justice for all.
DC, I figured you had I know you had something to say about about those two words being joined together.
Well, when I think about utopia, I think about my man from Fantasy Island. That plane. Well, of course, you know, in the system of racism, white supremacy, utopia cannot exist without, and the more I delve into studying how this power was accomplished and the reason why people don't push back on a regular basis, it has a lot to do with the physicality of racism, white supremacy, which then delves into the mindset. I think we have been very, very clear. This program, which we call the Code Breakers, you know, and guys, correct me if I go off the, I veer too far off, but the idea of this program, which me, T, and Paradox basically wanted to bring to other like minds and other people that do disagree. Yes, disagreement is not something that we are foreign to. Even amongst ourselves, we do not agree on everything, believe it or not. But Code Breakers, the whole idea of the program, and just in my eyes, just in my mentality, I think is worth going over again, pertaining to utopia. White supremacy is a code that was imprinted on the masses to dominate and to make people think that this is the way to live all around the planet. So when you hear people say, well, I was born to be an entrepreneur, that didn't happen 10,000 years ago. I'm just follow me here. These things, these concepts, these ideas, the language that we're speaking is fairly new. It's not something that is old, so it's something that is current. So let's fast forward. We are here now. We are in the year that they say is 2017. So what does that mean? We are under a system of racism, white supremacy. So this group that classified themselves as white, minority on the planet, wanted utopia. This is what they wanted. They wanted to dominate all groups of people. And of course, one of the major reasons why we have this program is the great late Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, and she describes it all the time. This is to protect whiteness. This is to protect the group of people that have classified themselves as white, very, very small minority on the planet, that have went about dominating and killing all groups of people that had a diverse way of living, where white supremacy cannot exist. So what do I mean? Native American populations. Nope, that's not our utopia. That's not our definition. You have to go. The Zulus in South Africa. Nope, that's not our definition of utopia. You got to go. The rest of you guys that's left over, you would speak English. You would actually adopt our customs, and you're going to like it. The Philippines. Nope, that is not the way we do business. You're gonna gather in capitalism, and you're going to mistreat yourselves. You're going to create sweatshops for your own people, and we're going to have a minority group of people that run it here, and it's going to be great for you guys. It's going to be called free democracy, free markets, free capitalism. This is nonsense. But to some people, capitalism is utopia. So when we say economic utopia, it depends on what actual definition you're going off of and who's actually saying the word economic utopia. I think it's contradictory. Things that deals with economics when you're dealing with an exchange, I'm under the belief, and I think that is pretty consistent, somebody's being mistreated in that exchange. When you make it to the point where people are demanding a certain thing, or they need a certain thing and they have to work to get that certain thing, then you can manipulate people that way. And that's how you get groups of people that go against their own interests just to survive. Because now we have this thing which is called capitalism, which to a lot of people is economic utopia. I hope that I was very condescending. I was like clear. I know that was a lot, but I just wanted to kind of get that out there. You know, I'm on the record. I don't believe in economic utopia, especially for victims of racism, people that's been exploited the most. Economic utopia to me is slavery. Utopia, especially for slavery. Economic utopia.
What about democratic utopia?
What does that mean? I mean, this has always been, as far as I know, a country that is based off democracy.
Well, from an American perspective, we went and fought to spread democracy, right? And so we didn't. You and I, our family, everyone in this nation, everyone in the Western world, Canada, all through Europe, we decided to go and fight other people around the planet and say, we have the best system called democracy. So you're going to implement this system. You know, we're going to attack communism. We're going to attack socialism worldwide. You're not going to be able to spread that. That's as far as Russia and other nations. We're going to spread this new system that we think is the best system. It's called democracy. And then we're going to run it through capitalism.
And capitalism is so-called free trade, right? Private businesses owning and, yeah. You know, determining the market. Go ahead. Jump on in, sir. This is your wheelhouse. So, I mean,
from an economic standpoint, I mean, because the thing of it is, the thing about the English language, which, if I'm not mistaken, is probably one of the more recent languages on the planet. I mean, it's a conglomeration of French, Latin, and some Germanic languages, and probably some others in there as well. But each field of, I guess you want to say, people activity, economics being one of them, law being another, has its own lingo. So economics basically has its own dictionary, just like legal law professors or people who are in the legal field have their own language, legalese. So you have different dictionaries for different things. So words you use in common parlance they don't equate to what people use every day. So therein lies some of the trickery. So, and I always touch on language, but look, I'm gonna just give you an illustration of what I mean by that. So if we take, right, something that's used in regular everyday parlance, like the word dollar, right? If we go back to one of the earlier dictionaries in 1856, let's say, and I'm gonna give some substance on it, some background, Bouvier's Law Dictionary. If you look at the definition of dollar, it's actually a weights and measures is what it falls under. Mm-hmm. And so what it is a silver coin of the United States of the value of 100 cents or a tenth part of an eagle. Eagle is a gold coin for the United States. And so this is the illustration I want to kind of give the listeners. So if a dollar is a unit of measurements, right, we can say that's the same as a gallon. A gallon is a unit of measurements. You know, you go into a supermarket, you want to get a gallon of milk. Now, here's what's interesting. So the illustration is I can use dollars. And again, you have to think of it as a unit of measurements, unit of measure. So if I use a dollar, same as a gallon, if I use a dollar to buy, how can I use that to buy gold and silver? Based on the original definition. And the complementary position to that would be, how can I use a gallon to buy milk? because milk is the substance. Gold and silver is the substance. I'm using dollars to buy gold and silver. That's equivalent to me using gallons to buy milk. So think about that. That is exactly what I mean when I'm talking about the language, and it's diverse across all different fields of practice in terms of people's careers, the way they talk to each other. And so the question then comes in, and you guys can weigh in, obviously, but how can you have a utopia? I mean, let's say if that's your position or that's what you want to try to achieve, you're trying to give justice. And we know based on human nature, I might be getting off on a tangent, and that might be another discussion for later, but we know that human nature is very, at least on the lower level, is very animalistic. So how can you have any utopia or a semblance of that based upon if you have so many different usages of a particular word or language, which someone, everyday common person, so to speak, might not understand, whereas someone else does? So that's just the illustration that I wanted to kind of give to kind of drive that point home. But I'm sorry to interrupt, DC. Go ahead, do your thing.
No. I'm good. Paradox, did you have something that you wanted to add to it?
Well, I mean, could you say that we're getting close to some form of utopia, even though the word utopia and oppression probably don't go together? But can a person put themselves in that kind of mental state though? So you can pretty much, I mean, we grew up in an environment where you're assimilated. So many people, I was wondering, can people put themselves in that state of mind where, I use the word successful, or a person that's popular, or a person that's loved, in an environment that's relatively easy. If anyone has ever lived off the land and had to do your own thing, there is a difference in my opinion. There is a difference in stressors, and there's a difference, I think, depending on who you are. So, can a person in this environment who's what someone considers living well, right? So you're not someone, you know, you can find people who I think possibly can put themselves in a mindset where things feel really good for them. And so I was just wondering, you know, maybe not in a literal sense, but can you just in your mind kind of move yourself into a space where you feel like things are pretty perfect for you, at least for a time being? So
Right. I
just know that when you're starting to make some money, or you're not necessarily even making money, but if you're starting to whatever you're doing, that you find some sort of physical comfort or spiritual comfort that you're doing, and you just, it puts you in a certain state of mind where it feels like things are where they need to be in your life. Not, you know, clearly you're not that person wouldn't necessarily be a person that's indulging in trying to search out or trying to seek out, you know, justice for all, or trying to really look at things in a way to where they can kind of see the other side of things. Just a person that can, you know, and I'm thinking many people are in these states, and it may not necessarily be called the state of utopia, but we have to be in some sort of state to function in an environment like this, if what you're telling me is real, right? So DC, I'm gonna put you there and say, you're gonna tell me that I'm in a system called racism, whatever that is, and, you know, people are being mistreated, particularly people that has color in their skin based off of the system that they put in place. If all of those things are true, then how can humans still function? How can humans make love? How can humans fall in love, get married, and have children? You know, how can people? It has to be something else going on to be able to accomplish this, right?
Yeah. Can I tell you the buy-in? So this is it. Classification got a lot to do with this. because people are interconnected to their oppressors, and this means intimately, sexually, children, that's based off the actual labor force. And this happened for 200 plus years. So we're talking generations of people that were born related to their oppressor. Now think about that for a second. Born related to their oppressor. Think about the tie-in to that, the emotional distress to that, and the reason why people, when I hear people that are forced into the classification of black say, "We're American, we built this country," they're talking about their adjacent to being white. Because you said something very critical earlier. We fought in every conflict that this so-called country has ever had. There's been a significant portion of people that fall under the classification of black that have been in the military, have used the military for financial means, for sustenance, for a way of life in this so-called economic utopia that we live in today. And that's the buy-in, participation. That is critical to what we're talking about. See, because if you don't realize the extent of what the system is, we can't actually even begin to talk about it, because really all we're talking about is how we're going to be white in blackface. I mean, that's to me, that's what ends up being the case. These people are still telling us that we're not white, but we're going to act as close to white as possible because we want the same things that they want. We want to rule like them. We want to dominate like them. We want to use their economic systems to mistreat other people like they do. We want to do the same things. So when we talk about economics, think about the basis for what economics is. Maybe your thought pattern ain't about that. Maybe your thought pattern is about making bread. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, I understand. You know what I mean? Maybe it's about just taking care of you and yours and your family. I understand that too. And I think the second part of what we're going to discuss is, do we use capitalism when we understand the economic system and how it mistreats other people that are not as educated as so-called the person is that's mistreating other folks? Do we and then use our expertise to mistreat our so-called group, or the group that we're supposed to be falling under, and we use that as a crutch? And you know, people that listen to this program can just go into their mindset, whether it's the local preacher at your actual neighborhood church, whether it's your school district, you know, the mayor of your city that happens to be a victim of racism, you know, the blame that we fixate on victims, saying that you should know better because what? You're part of our group, so you should do things this way. But see, that's the
you still there, DC? Did you drop off?
Yeah, I think we lost him.
Yeah, I see him on the board.
The PG County commissioner. Remember when he got caught up? And they came for him. Uh-huh. FBI came for him. Somebody snitched downtown or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Upper Marlboro, they snitched on him. And they told, yep, hey, you know, he got bread at the house. You can go catch him. You know, think about that. And I guarantee you that was somebody that's classified as black. But here's the thing. You're not telling them nothing that they don't already know. Well, I guess they told us. So it's time to go ahead and pick him up. We can't use him anymore. I mean, because hell, if they told us, then we're gonna have to act on it. You're not telling nobody nothing new. It's almost like somebody thinking that they sneaking to sell drugs on a corner. You think they don't know who the D boys are? Come on, man. Like I'm all I'm saying is this whole piece about trying to do things to manipulate this system to an advantage is already tied in. There's other. You know, it's bigger than Nino Brown. You know what I mean? I don't know how to explain it other than there are already situations put into place where people, all they do is investigate people that do scams, people that manipulate and, you know, file taxes and cheat on their taxes and things of that nature. man, they got people that study people to cheat on their taxes, man, where it's not even worth them even investigating. They just allow you to do it until somebody just come back, hey, why don't you go check on that person? They keep doing the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like they keep doing it. Like, people think they get away with stuff. That's what I mean. Like, it's not no way that you can get away with anything. They tie you in when you're born. That's the system. That's what this is. And if we're going to get real, as the so-called new year has started, the winter solstice has started anew. You know, maybe we need to get a little bit more real about what the language is and push a little bit, not in a bad way, not in a way that's going to shame victims of racism, white supremacy. That's not what I'm here for. But to be honest and to have real discussions about, okay, if you're going to go into the system, if you're going to use the economic system to your advantage, okay, be cognizant of how you mistreat your own people when it comes down to that, or at least be honest. And don't be honest in the sense of, yeah, you can go ahead and have this too, because like I said, the system has rules and it binds people to it. It binds you to mistreat. That's all I'm saying. Like if I had a store, you know why when we go to stores, when we go to an all black store, all black grocery store, what how is the pricing? Is the pricing the same as it is in Walmart?
Can't be. Can't be.
Why is that?
Have all black grocery stores?
I'm just saying, just a couple. I'm just saying, okay. You know, the little mom and pop stores. You know what I'm saying? That's up on Pennsylvania Avenue. Just small. Yeah, it's small.
They got them in D.C., but yeah, they're gonna be priced out because of how the market structure. Yeah.
The same thing that you can get the little cream of nature. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That you want to get, you know, for your hair and all this type of stuff to get your curls going, to get your curls popping or whatever. You know that thing that's probably like $2 at Walmart. Guess how much it is at the local black store?
$8.
And what? Hey, you looking at the lady like, come on now. I mean, right. I want to help you out.
Yeah, but I think
in an economic system where, I mean, come on, you in the hood, and you charging me $8?
But you're going up against. Well, first of all, you're going up against a massive machine. Number one, number two, the people who are listening to this program have been trained and conditioned to pretty much reject everything you just said.
Absolutely.
Over the last 15 minutes, you sound ridiculous.
But prove that you can get a better deal at a small mom and pop store than you can at Walmart. That's all I'm saying.
First of all, how many black businesses can, and I know this, people will probably say, you know, this is a defeatist attitude, but just being honest,
y'all are sounding very negative right now.
Exactly. But listen, how many black businesses do you know that can fill a shipping container full of goods? You know how big a shipping container is? And then have that pay import fees, pay tax stamps, tax duty stamps on shipping stuff from other nations. Who has those type of connections?
Just real quick, who be at the 7-Elevens in the hood? Who be at the 7-Elevens each morning in the hood?
As far as
in the hood, who's at the 7-Elevens?
Who's running them?
No, I'm saying not running them. I'm talking about who's at the 7-Elevens in the neighborhoods actually looking for work for people to just try to like to do things like that. Wow, if you got like an actual local store that you're trying, I mean,
Mexicans.
You don't even have to say Mexicans. You just say people that basically are struggling from another country. Most likely they speak Spanish. Yeah, we don't know where they're from. So, you know, even when we say Mexicans, it's almost disrespectful. But just the fact that
you would try to negotiate
with someone that you know that's undocumented, and they're trying to do things to do what? To survive in this system. See how brutal it is? So you end up becoming part of mistreatment. That's what I'm saying.
This system needs that labor. It needs that labor to function, apparently.
It won't run without it. It's always needed free labor,
whatever word you want to use. But
1619 to 1865, there was legal capitalism of basically owning bodies that were sexed out of whiteness. Those children that they had with African mothers, part of tribes that was from the African continent, all over the actual African continent, and actual local tribes here could not be white. So those groups, when they became children, had to be put into the workforce, right? Got to do something with them. So those kids that's born to these mothers that are not white, that are part of the native land, that's part of the people that we brought over here, they're going to be mistreated just like them. Maybe we'll put them in a house. Maybe we'll treat them a little bit better because, you know, that's my son. That's my daughter, by the way. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna have to stop Junior from sleeping with his half sister. Like this was going on all the time.
Well, the thing is that might even be a bit on a smaller scale when you compare it globally, to where the European is able to manage an entire landmass, and they're not doing that. You know, so how do you make a deal with China to use 100 million of their people as labor? You know, how do you go into India and use 200 or 300 million of their people as labor? Now, of course, these nations have already been conquered by the European, but it's just when you think about the ability to be able to manipulate the environment on both ends. So on one end, you capture people, you take land, you exploit the land, you take the people there, you murder them, you bring in new people, you rape them, you exploit them. For centuries, simultaneously, you're in other places on the planet where you're not even using that same tactic, and you're still able to take advantage of hundreds of millions of people, you know, all to benefit, you know, your coffers, all to benefit your system to continue to exploit the planet. But I do want you to clean up a little bit from a Black perspective or an African American perspective specifically. Because even looking at Brazil, it's a little bit different, but specifically here in the United States, go ahead.
I just want to say this because it's very, very important, because I think that the same thing that happens to China, Asia, any of these places that we have now adapted the white European mindset, these are not the same people. So they was easily manipulated and defeated that way because of the smaller groups, the empires that was basically conspiring to defeat the East. There was dynasties already in place. Like you're talking about multiple dynasties in China. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they lost at the end of the day. I mean, it's pretty straightforward.
That's what I'm saying. Absolutely.
Don't go into detail about that. They lost.
That's the point. Absolutely.
At the end of the day, it's not complicated. So my point is that from a Black perspective, though, I just want you to clarify, when you're saying that, you know, we don't have shipping containers and we don't have this, we don't have that, can you be a little bit more specific on why don't we have them or why can't we have them? Or what has anything been done to prevent full participation? And what I mean by that is specifically here, we've been given access to be able to participate to a degree, right? So we can fight in wars, we can start some form of business, work together, we can do a lot of, we can participate, we can be CEOs of companies, we can run this, we can run that, we can go to the top universities, us as well as other non-whites across the planet can also come here, and we can also go overseas as well to participate. So is it that the European is saying that only 10% of us can get in? Because we are in, we're in the mix. So I don't want to, we're going to bring it back to white supremacy, obviously, as far as how what the purpose of it is, but the everyday person, when they're looking out to the world, they are clearly, it appears at least that we are gaining some ground. We're all the way in. We believe in capitalism wholeheartedly. We was raised on capitalism. We've been given the information where it appears that this is the best way to be. How do you attack that type of thought process?
Well, I think part of it is because, actually, Paradox, you alluded to this in one of our previous shows, how when you went to the African American Museum in Washington, D.C., how it showed the level of skill and production that black, so-called black labor achieved. And so, obviously, you had bustling cities like Rosewood, Black Wall Street, things of that nature. Some of the more popular ones that we know, I'm sure there were a lot more at that time and even prior to that, that had a nice handle, a good handle on commerce, conducting business. But once you are oppressed and you're taken out of that, whether by military or by simply sexing in and out of whiteness, as DC put it, then that particular bloodline, that or that knowledge base starts to thin, and so it gets lost over time. I mean, I know like some of my grandparents, even my great grandparents, they knew how to, in the Virginias, they knew how to cut tobacco. They knew when to harvest it based on certain moon cycles. They knew how much they could get for a certain bale. They knew how to hang it up in smokehouses and how to cure the tobacco, and they would take it to markets, and they knew that they could get a certain amount for it based upon speculators looking at the different quantities of tobacco that they had out there. They would grade it based on the tobacco leaf. So a lot of this knowledge either you can make the argument that it hasn't been passed down, but then to me that would leave out the fact that there are a lot of other things.
Hold up. I know you went back a little bit in time. We have specifically black people do have rich black neighborhoods, right? Middle class neighborhoods. We have black universities producing thousands of experts every year over year for over 100 years. I mean, what do you do with that? You know, we have many right. millionaires. We have hundreds of black entrepreneurial conferences for psychology, conferences for this, conferences for that, year over year. We have thousands of organizations to assist and help women, gays, men, children, rich kids, poor kids. So when you're seeing all of that, even though it may be 2%, 3%, 5%, 9% of our particular group, if you want to break us out, how do people, so when you say one thing, it's like, well, I hear you saying that, but what about all these other things that we've been given the rights under their system to be able to do? Because I think the right. key here is us showing our loyalty to the system. I don't know, maybe not.
That's what I was about to say, and that is the main problem, because we do have tie-in. We do have a reason to protect the system that is still mistreating most of us that are classified as not white. So what do you do with that? That is the question.
The other question is, the system itself is mistreating white people as well. How do you deal with that as well?
Well, just to address the first question in terms of playing devil's advocate, and a lot of people will have that same thought pattern in terms of saying that we have HBCUs, we have thousands of universities across the nation churning out young black people who are well trained and edified in these various fields, but how many of those universities teach? And this is another conversation that could be had later, but I think the point should be made. How many of these universities and schools teach a person how to produce anything? I mean, if you go to the legal field necessarily, and this is no knock on anybody who's in that field or studying that field, but it doesn't necessarily produce anything in terms of something tangible. I mean, you could argue and say, well, it produces justice. That is ultimately the goal, I think. But how many people are learning how to run a bank? You know, regardless how you feel about how that operates in the system, justly or unjustly, how many people know how to run a shipping line? I think the last black, I don't know if anyone's currently, but I think the last one was Marcus Garvey's, which has been defunct for decades now.
Well, one thing I know is that there is nothing on this planet that black people don't do or don't know how to do. So that's one thing I've noticed is that if you research it, you can pretty much find us. We're involved in everything. You know, we work at the shipping yards, right? We drive boats or whatever, however they state when you're moving a boat around. But you mean from that perspective, you meaning owning a shipping yard or owning multiple boats?
Well, I think we're talking about it's level.
There's nothing that we don't do, right? But when you start talking about ownership, then that's when the conversation obviously is going to shift, I think, at that point. I want to contrast what we're talking about up against the word justice, though, and up against the word mistreatment, right? Because living in the environment is what most was. We're all living in the environment, obviously, but the struggles are, well, I'm living in this environment, I'm trying to function versus trying to fight for justice or versus trying to stop mistreatment. Because clearly we can spend forever talking about the ins and outs of the system itself and what we've accomplished, and does that even mean anything? And you accomplishing something in an empire designed to exploit human beings, plants, animals, etc. Is there something to be proud of? Is there something to be looked at as an accomplishment? Does that make sense, or am I getting a little bit too far out there?
No, I'm going to let DC get on it right quick, but I do want to say that I think we're dealing with levels. So when you say that, you know, people are being exposed, that, you know, they are, you know, they might be a captain of a ship, they might deal with
We engineered skyscrapers and everything. It's something that we don't do.
They might deal with bills of lading in terms of transferring goods from one party to another. They might know these things, but when you're dealing with levels and you're dealing with, I would call it what is classically been called under accounting terms, and that's separation of duties under the guise of, which kind of makes sense, but under the guise of keeping people from knowing too much information is basically what it boils down to, so that they can't, in their terminology, defraud the company. So it's automatic. It's already built in to keep you from learning so much. You can go to five different departments, but each department is not going to work.
I think when you start drilling into the development or the maturity of a democracy or a capitalist system, that's what we're kind of talking about, because it changes all the time. So historically, things were on a smaller scale at one point, and then now, with companies unifying and eating each other and buying each other, and it's on a whole nother scale when it comes to managing things, especially what they call the globalist people who are trying to merge things together. So it's a whole different. It's so many things that are going on just within the structure itself.
Let me just say something, and right after this, we can. I think there may be some callers, and we can give them the information on how to actually. Well, in fact, you can give them the information on how to actually come on if they want to like say anything.
Go ahead, make the comment.
Just a quick comment. Back to what you were saying about the tie-in with black people. I think that. The reason why, well, to white people that are mistreated within this system also, the reason why the white people, and you see the so-called, what people will call, name called, this is a name calling thing, but it's just for effect, where they would say the redneck is still probably racist or outwardly racist person, is because racism gives you that. Think about it. It gives you that mental comfort to say, at least I'm not no nigger. Like if you see someone, I think there was a show on Bill Maher where, you know, people was voting against their own interest. And I think this is Pelosi's. I think this is Pelosi's daughter. She does documentaries, right? So she went down south. This is not only down south issue. This is not only a down south issue. This is not only a down south issue. She went to somewhere that was outside of the city, wherever she was at, located at, and she found some white people that was living impoverished, which is, that's a lot of them, right? So she went to talk to this white person, right? Why would you vote? I don't want to vote for nobody. I mean, Gus T, shout out to Gus T Renegade. He made an actual a drop on it. You know, I don't want to vote for no Obama. I ain't voting for no. And all the policies that Obama was trying to implement or trying to push through would have benefited this person. But the tie-in, why is this person so comfortable with everything being the way it is when they know that this system doesn't benefit them directly either? It's because of whiteness. Think about it. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. If whiteness was not so important to these people that classify themselves as white, this country would not exist. Don't say it wouldn't exist. It wouldn't exist in the way that we have it now. I mean, because the thing is, without the bottom floor, without having the, and this is shout out to Abolitionist Radio. Please tune in to Black Talk Radio. Them brothers talk about it weekly. Mr. Reed talks about it all the time. Free labor, slavery. The 13th Amendment just moved to the actual prison plantation. That's really what this is. And those people that are in prisons are majority black people. It's not enough mistreatment of white people that fall into those classes that's going to cause an issue. Because if this was just an economic issue, race wasn't the issue. You know, some people be like, this is not about race. That's nonsense. I was about to say something else. But the reason why this is clearly a race issue is because you have poor people that work against their own interests that will vote for somebody that don't care about them, but it's strictly because they believe in white supremacy. As long as they can dog whistle white supremacy, that's a tie-in, even though it's against their economic interest. That's the reason why you can have white people still being mistreated, because guess what? That black person that gets a job and they see that, even though we are such a low minority rate, it can still just tick them off to the nth degree. You have Donald Trump in office because of that. Think about that. Donald Trump is in office because of President Obama and the effect that he had on white people, on whiteness. The danger of that. The danger. That's just wanted to kind of go ahead and get that point in, because that is the tie-in. That's the reason why you don't have white people rioting all the time. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like white people just doing things that's dangerous, because you got poor white people all over the place. And you know, that's why I don't believe in, you know, having a dogmatic type of ideal about poor black people and the reason why we riot. No, the reason why we riot is because mistreatment has been in place for centuries now. And you know when you're being mistreated. So when a group of people has been mistreated so long, no opportunities, it become pathology, they feel depressed, they feel anger, and then they lash out because they don't have whiteness. You're labeled as a person that's other, black, dangerous. You're somebody that should be controlled. Your community needs to be regulated at all times. You can't walk rash, you can't do anything. Even if it's so-called good kid, bad kid, it don't matter. You know what I'm saying? You got your hand sack and you're smoking a square, a cigarillo, whatever. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be treated accordingly. And that's the tie-in.
Does that apply to, say, Africans that are in England? Does that apply to people who live in Vietnam?
I think it's global. Now, I'm not as versed to other actual areas, of course, because we live here in HQ. But as far as what I have been able to see, there is all kinds of basically mistreatment going on in the UK, by the way. Brexit did happen. Mm-hmm. In the Philippines, I mean, sweatshops, people mistreating each other, people that's put into place to mistreat their own brethren, their own relatives, their own family. Absolutely. New Guinea, you know, they get somebody that's part of their population that speaks the language, and then they get busy to mistreatment. That's what happens. It's racism, white supremacy.
What about when you're looking at some place like Rwanda?
Talking about Rwanda during the Civil War and the conflicts mm-hmm. between people that are forced into the classification of black that never looked at themselves as the same people. mm-hmm. Confusion about the reason why you was allowed to get weapons or ammunition in the first place. The reasons why you was allowed to get all-terrain vehicles, bullets, mm-hmm. things of that nature. Who's supplying you with these ammunitions and who's training you and why? Why do you have green fatigues? Why do you have these boots? Why do you have Humvees? You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Nobody in Rwanda are making these vehicles. Yeah, they're being shipped there.
Is that the same in like a Nicaragua with the Contras and Sandinistas?
Well, you already know what that's all about. That goes all the way back to Oliver North and the Iran-Contra hearings. I mean, you know, we came up on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a D.C. staple. You know what I mean? Everybody knew about that back in the day.
But are you able to get someone to understand or at least ask the question, can they see how it all ties together to show you that you're dealing with a superpower? And not only are you dealing with a superpower, you're dealing with a power that you are heavily invested in, that you support wholeheartedly.
Well, the part of breaking the code is that the imprint on you to believe that this is really something that you're doing as anti the system is basically built in to support the system at the same time. So if we're talking about trying to
hold up, stay right there. Can you tie that into slavery votes?
To slavery votes?
Yeah.
As far as like prison populations, or are we talking about?
No, I'm talking about during chattel slavery, you had thousands upon thousands of revolts all through the South, all through the Caribbean. We never stopped fighting these people. We never stopped fighting them. We was fighting them in Africa, we was fighting them on the boats, and we was fighting them here continuously for the last 5 centuries. So we've been at war with them, which is strange. It's all strange to me because there's so many different things happening, but we've also been fighting them at the same time. So can you tie in that statement, adjusting to slave revolts?
There are those of us that fight, and there are those of us that compromise, and there are those of us that stay in the middle and are neutral, that sit on the sideline and just exist and try to survive in the system that's set up during their era of living. So that is true. We did have people that revolt, and we still have people that revolt. Hell, we have Abolitionist Radio, we have Code Break. I mean, we have people that are constantly trying to bring out content, to bring out new thought, to bring out a new way of looking at the system, to even just allow people to think about it and to wake people up to a certain degree, if you want to call it that. I don't like to use the word conscious because it makes you seem like you high and above anybody. That's not what this is about. This is just about awareness to me. And like I said, we're always open to ideas and different terminologies that may work a little bit better than what we're discussing. I mean, of course, we don't have all the answers because this problem is not solved yet. But just to get back to what you're saying, in my honest evaluation of how the system has been ran for so long, the reason why it's basically metathesized into this thing to where it feels automatic now is because we have a complicity due to the violence that we have experienced. So, okay, they told us to get education. We got education. I mean, this is done during George Washington Carver era. You know, W.E. Du Bois, Booker T. Washington, pull yourself up by the bootstrap. There's examples all over the place. And then, you know, there are things that are done to shut you down because of groups. We already talked about it. Had there always been poor white people here in this country? Had there always been a large population of poor white people?
Absolutely.
Who do these people attack the most when they fall under economic strife?
Black people.
The Ku Klux Klan, right? These are mm-hmm. soldiers that got defeated during Civil War, mad as hell.
Struggling.
And the people and the people that they hated the most were the people that they said, hey, they was once protected slavery, so they wanted to kill all the black people, terrorize. They said, let's go ahead and have a great old time terrorizing black folks here and into infinity. To where basically these people that grew up under this regime are politicians now. So those good old boys that had grandchildren and granddaughters and grand sons basically upholding the system of racism, white supremacy. Those people, which is not too long ago, are still here. They still believe in the system. They still believe that is basically the right way to get to utopia, by the way. So yeah, it's all tied together, man. It's all tied together. T, what say you, man? I've been talking too much on this, man.
Cool. All I would say is, in terms of an economic utopia, I think that's what it comes back to. Based upon how things are currently, in order to even try to achieve that or some semblance of an economic or just a utopia period, it will require lots of death and destruction. So just in that alone, that is an oxymoron. I mean, the fact that you have to commit injustices to produce justice, I mean, isn't that what we've been sold as the essence of democracy? And that's the reason why we are over in other countries with help people at gunpoint.
Yeah, we gotta drop drones. We gotta drop drones on innocent kids and babies all across the world to maintain, you know, peace and democracy, and to show them this is the way that we need to live. This is the way that
you might have to pause
to live in your life.
And you might have to pause in water in this country to get us to move.
Just get real. All you have to do is just point out just the hypocrisy of it all.
Mm-hmm. But we got two callers. If you wanna go ahead and take, we can start with I think 973. If you wanna comment, I'll mute your line. I think you need to hit like ## or ** or something to talk. Yeah, ** to speak. Are you there?
Yes, this is Jersey Girl, but I was just listening. This is my first to your program, so I'm just listening intently. Carrie and gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, well, anytime, I'm sorry. Anytime that you want to comment, please feel free to set us straight. Please. Any suggestions are needed within the system.
All right, we're going to go to 864, see if they want to comment. 864, if you can hit ** to unmute yourself. If you want to comment.
No, sir. I'm enjoying the show. Thank you. Calling from South Carolina, the upstate.
Oh, thank you. All right. DNT, did y'all have any more comments on us?
We come up on break.
We might be getting close.
Yeah. Yeah. We can go ahead and flow in. Do you want to drop the? I don't know if did you send the clip over or no? Well, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I sent him over. He can. You want him to play him now before we go to break?
No, it's just we don't have to play them all because we're running short on time. But I would like to play the argument clip from Mr. Fuller. When we come back from break. So Mr. Reed, if you can cue that up on the way when we get back from break, I think it's very very useful for what we're going to discuss today. We can kind of end it with Dr. Wells' quote at the end of the program. We have time. That sound good?
So you want him to just play it and then go to break?
Well, you know, if we have time to play it now, we can play it now, but if we can do it on the on the way back in for break, then we can do it that way. What you think, Mr. Reed?
All right, this is the Code Breakers, and we're going to break. We'll be right back.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Since even before I wrote my book, when I just had a few notes, that any time the white supremacists, because once you are supreme, meaning once you, what does supreme mean? It means you can dictate to another person every move that they make or don't make. You put the person in a prison-type situation, which is what racism is, a prison-type situation. And so you envision like a prison. You are completely subject to someone who is opposed to you on the basis of color. They are just going to work against you because you are the incorrect color in their minds, his or her mind. So, and that person is supreme over you. I'm not talking about supreme in mind or something like that, or supreme some type of mythical spiritual sense or something, but I'm saying the person can tell you what to do and you can't tell them what to do and make them do it, but they can tell you what to do and make you do it and yeah. Do this all the time, all right, you know, and get away with it, and there's nobody to go to when you are yelling and screaming about your condition. There's nobody you can turn to. Now, some people say, well, you turn to your religion and all like that. But if the person keeps doing it, it just means that whatever your religion is hasn't intervened so far, simply because the person keeps doing it. Your religion may kick in at some time, whatever it is. And so, therefore, the code does not say anything about me or anyone else. The recommendation is people should practice his or her religion, whatever it is. But there's no religion that's been proven to be stronger than the religion of white supremacists so far when it comes to non-white people. I've said since even before I wrote my book, when I just had
I've come up with a term, a word term, using words again, to handle situations like we have right now. And I call it Victims Guaranteed Qualification. In other words, VGQ. That's how I remember it. Victims Guaranteed, and it's listed in my word guide, Victims Guaranteed Qualification. And what is that guaranteed qualification? Because I've had these type of discussions, and I've been involved in them, and I've observed them down through the years. And black people sometimes, many times, we start confusing ourselves and each other, and we get combative sometimes over the use of words, you know, like the term Black Lives Matter. Sometimes that can start a big argument, and all that really comes out of it is a big argument between black people about whether or not they should use the word, you know, and White Lives Matter, and whether or not All Lives Matter. And then people start arguing about that. And they're just words. So I came up with a term called Victims Guaranteed Qualification, which means anybody who wants to use any term to describe whatever his or her situation is, if that person is black, a victim of white supremacy, all right, he or she has not only the privilege but the duty to say whatever he or she wants to say. That's why I'm saying right now about this particular word, so that we don't get you know, all caught up in it, and use 3 or 4 hours going back and forth. Use the terms that you think will work best for you. That's it. That keeps black people from getting into these endless arguments that go on and on and on and on in every beauty parlor, in every barber shop, at every meeting and whatnot, going around in a big circle, sometimes just about what words we're going to use. So you give everybody as an individual. You don't really give it to them. They have it anyway. Use whatever terms you think will work.
But what you said
is... The whole purpose for using words is to get a job done. So if you saying that the system of white supremacy should be changed to a system of white inferiority, and call that system a system of inferiority, and that works for you and it works for others, then by all means use it. You don't have to get permission from Neely Fuller or anybody else. This is what I do when I write a book. I don't get anybody's permission. Indirectly, I get permission from the white supremacists. Otherwise, they would just squash my book. They would just say, we're going to squash your book and you too, because I say that they are supreme, okay? The white supremacists are supreme, which is why I wrote a book about our problem with white supremacy. But if somebody else wants to call it by a different name and say, there are some black people who say there's no such thing as white supremacy, that it's no such thing as racism, that it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I don't get into an argument with people about that. I simply say, oh, well, if you come to the conclusion that racism doesn't exist and that your book is just a whole bunch of nonsense, and there's a lot of people who have said that about my book, say, you're writing about racism. Racism don't even exist, man. That's just in your mind. If you get that out of your mind, you can go on about your business and do what you got to do. Talk about some racism. Ain't nobody telling you what to do. Ain't nobody making you do nothing. You do what you want to do. If you're a real man, I've had people say that to me. And my response has been, I'm not going to argue with you. If you believe that, go with it all the way and see where it'll take you.
Yeah, Mr. Fuller. He sums it up, boy. It's hard to even respond back to that. I don't know if I have anything to say.
Yeah. Hard to follow up on that. Sure. But definitely to the point. It makes a lot of sense when you think about it realistically. I did want to make a clarification, if I could, just quickly, about the units of measurement, and then I guess if you want to get into military versus civilian, the dollar actually weighs 412.5 grains. 900 of it is silver and 100 of it is alloy, but the silver is malleable. Very malleable. You have to add another stronger metal to keep it from coming apart. But anyway, military versus civilian. Is there a difference?
So is there a difference?
Is there a difference in this society, in this system?
Yeah, I think so.
Aren't we constantly under surveillance and some type of threat?
Yeah, every day. So would you use the word military state? The reason why I use the word civilian and military is just because those are the common words that we obviously use. I know that the military has rules and laws within the structure itself that I don't have a lot of information on. And then as a civilian, I know that, you know, I have a certain role that I have to play as well in this environment. Is that not the case? So I know from a military perspective, we can go pretty broad with that as far as those are the people who supposedly protect us here, right? To keep it simple. Me as a civilian, my job is to, you know, go to work, have a family, participate, provide whatever tasks need to be done, building bridges, building buildings, pushing papers, working in factories, you know, running a bank. That's, you know, that's my pretty much a function that I'm going to have. And then the military, I guess, is in place to protect us, protect our stuff, right? Defensive in some cases, offensive in some cases, you know, show, you know, to stop us from being taken over, I guess.
What if you are a civilian, quote unquote, that works in a military installation? If I'm a
contractor?
If I'm another country, right, and I'm invading, I'm not going to, and I'm bombing a government installation, I'm not going to save and not bomb, you know, do some type of surgical strike while I'm only hitting the place where military works in that building. I'm hitting the whole building. So can we honestly make that distinction is what I guess I'm kind of getting at.
Okay. So when you're talking about when this country went into what they call Iraq and bombed everything, you mean like that type of situation?
Or even Nagasaki or Hiroshima.
I mean, again, I don't know. That's why I put it on there. It's just lots of questions that I have going into the 2017 timeframe to kind of look at what does it mean to be, you know, would someone say you're under military rule? Would someone say that there is no difference because they have this thing called the draft and we all are potential soldiers? But as far as, you know, I don't have the skill set. I didn't go to West Point, so I don't have military strategy skill, you know, knowledge. I don't know the philosophy of militaries, you know, why they decide to kill women and children in certain situations, why that even matters, why there's a separation between killing what they, specifically the American military, distinguishes between killing civilians, killing soldiers. I know they have lots of rules set around what that means, how all those definitions work. I mean, obviously I don't know because I'm not in the military and I haven't been given orders for someone to explain to me that these are the reasons why we make all these different distinguishing situations. Also, this is why we choose to use these type of weapons. In some cases, I guess the smartest people decide to say we send troops in. In other cases, we're going to break them by dropping bombs. And you know, this works, this doesn't work. You know, these are our plans. You know, we want to, like I was hearing that they were running military ops. And this is what comes out. Clearly, most things are, I guess, covert. I don't know. But I know, like, up because of the ice melting or whatever, I know they were doing a lot of things up in the Arctic. This country and Sweden and other places to try to claim some of the land that's up there now because of the supposedly because of the melting caps. And so they run what they call, I think it's called like, I forget the word they use, but it's like a military, I don't want to call it war games, but I guess that's maybe kind of what it is war games. I can't remember the right terminology exactly. But they just go up there and I guess you show your force basically. And so I don't know, again, like I said, I don't know if by you obtaining a certain amount of arms or building a certain amount of arms and then showing some of that is also a deterrent, or you showing your power which checks everybody else. So, you know, we all can participate, but you need to understand who's the big dog on the block. And I'm going to show you some of that. I'm going to maybe drop some things on some places just to let people know on the planet that this is why we rule things. I mean, I don't, again, like I said, for me, I don't really know. That's something I want to learn more about, because it seems like, and I could be wrong, but it seems like everything really does start with the military. And I know in this country, from what they say, that they always are distinguishing civilian versus military. Like I think right now, normally I think that the State Department, not the State Department, is it the I forget which some of the cabinet positions, they traditionally prefer to have a civilian running them versus a military guy. So I know there's something with having the military in check relative to other nations globally, as far as how the powers that be prefer to run places. But again, you know, that's just me throwing stuff out there. Did y'all have any comments on that? or just thoughts in general just about the relationship between those two groups, or questions for that matter?
Yeah,
well,
go ahead, DC.
No, what I was about to say was that I think the reason why this is just real quick, that military is basically enlisted out globally or out abroad is to ensure dominance and ensure that nobody step up to the forefront to try to even think about testing the dominance that's basically been put forth. That word superpower is used for a reason. It's almost like we are the predominant group. We basically have enough to wipe you off the planet, and don't make us not use our good graces for you to practice our way of living, you know, because our way of living is the way that you should live. So even though you may have a way of living for thousands and thousands of years, you need to adapt our customs because we have a more peaceful way of existence. You know, your existence compared to ours is repressive. So if I was a person that look at the so-called American way of life, and then you look at the way people live in so-called Iraq or Iran, especially, you know, during the 70s, they would think that, especially when it come down to women, that is a repressive regime. So very, 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 very important to, you know, kind of bring up the point that a lot of what military is also is to kind of go back to that word utopia, to kind of imprint a better way of living for other groups of people, even though there may be some resistance to that. So to imprint your culture on that group, and sometimes that is done through a military solution. So in people's minds, when they drop bombs, people actually say this: we kill the few to save the many. You know, you hear that in Star Trek, you hear that in a lot of cases. If we do not use this military strategy right up front to kind of, you know, quell this resistance, then this is going to make us kill a whole lot more people. And then, you know, we're going to really look bad for doing it.
So we're getting kind of back to maintaining order on the planet, basically.
Absolutely. We need to have things
order. Categorized. We need to have things in line. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We need to have things sorted a certain way. We cannot have what we think is chaos or what we think is inappropriate behavior on the planet.
Yeah, or what we believe is mistreatment, or what makes us feel uncomfortable, because no other group can kind of like get enough power to, you know, tie in. So what I'm going to call anything that, if there's groups of the countries that agree with this Islamic religion or the whole group that gets together and try to get a military strategy like the U.S., because to them, this is what they have to do to preserve their culture. They think that it's a holy war. Then, you know, we need to snuff out that group, and we need to call it something. Oh, let's call it terrorism. That's right. Let's call it terrorism, and then everybody's going to agree with us because, of course, we're a superpower. We provide all the weapons, we provide all ammunition, and we got people that are classified as black over here in this particular country that are actually part of that religion that fight in our militaries. So how did that make sense?
I do know that white people do feel, or they know, or they study Islam because they fit their from what the TV says, there's over 1 billion Muslims, and that's growing, and that the European feels threatened by their system or their way of life. So with all of the suppression that they've done, right, with all of the warfare that they've done, and especially the global warfares back during World War II, and then also all the hot, smaller conflicts up until now to maintain that order, it still seems that no matter how powerful they think they are, and no matter how supreme they believe they are, and no matter if they can even show you their supremacy, you still cannot apparently stop other human beings from spawning some other system to potentially combat their system.
Absolutely.
You know, I know we can get into more details about Islam and the different fraction the fractions and the different groups and just it, I know it's some complexities to the beliefs. A wonderful belief system, there's some complexities to it. And but I just wonder sometimes is that from a nature or a balance standpoint, things that are much deeper than the human on the surface, but more of a spiritual level, could not prevent that event from taking place. Because they, to me, they do is from at least, like I said, from a television perspective, and also a lot of books have been written about Islam from a white supremacy perspective, in my opinion. Right. Basically, white people trying to explain or condition whites to be anti-regardless, right, by any means. Matter of fact, back to Dr. Welsing and her theory on genetic annihilation, you can see that if you were a white person, it could look pretty threatening out there to you, right? You got these folks with color coming from the South. Even though you tried to exterminate them, you couldn't genetically. They mixed in with Southern Europeans, and that since you're running from color, their color is still there. The indigenous bloodlines in this land, that color is still there. You couldn't run from that. You know, you couldn't outgrow other humans on the planet, right? So your population growth, now even though they control our growth, specifically the African American in America, but as far as the rest of the planet's growth, you know, the continent of Africa is going to be over 1 billion people, et cetera. But when you look at the Islamic faith, we're talking about 1.5 billion and growing. That has to seem like a threat to them. And so that has to be a connection between that and them going back to the Middle East, the French, the English, the Germans, the Americans, the Russians are all back in the Middle East. When you really think about it, they're all in there, right? Russia's reestablishing its military base in Syria, did it a year ago. You got the French bombing Libya, et cetera. They got all their spies over there. You know, they got the whole thing, you know, the machine is basically on. And I do wonder, is it a combination of not only their genetics as far as them trying to maintain their color, the most extreme, and then as well their belief system, right? So if I'm not mistaken, historically, they use Catholicism, Christianity, Protestants, whatever the names they put on these beliefs, they've used those beliefs to infiltrate the planet. It's one of their major tactics, over the centuries. And even though non-whites infuse their ancient faiths with their faiths, and obviously you have a combination of both in many areas on the planet, you have this thing, Islam, who's been fighting against Christianity for, 1,500 years? I guess, maybe longer, maybe less. I don't know the exact timeline on that. So but the growth of it, now we can get into the why, the hows and the whys and their own slavery issue with Africa, et cetera, which is a whole another, we can have a whole other discussion about that. But regardless of that, just looking at the European from a threat perspective. And the reason why I was bringing it up is just because, will they leverage the black person in America to fight against Islam? Now, I know that we have black troops clearly fighting against Islam, but will there be a continued effort to ensure our loyalty to whiteness and our assistance going up against Islam, say, over the next 100, 200 years or so? Just a random thought. Would y'all have anything on that before we get to the next question?
Well, just one more thing, and we can move on to the next part of this. The power that somebody exudes, and when it becomes a certain issue, and somebody feels like that power needs to be neutralized, that's the reason why the military has to always be into play. No such thing as a peaceful resolution when you got guns and bombs and militaries and drones and
peace
things
is force,
of that nature.
That's
what I'm saying. Peace
it's
is
a force situation. Peace is right. There's no such thing as it. It doesn't
exist.
I have to
imprint on you my dominance physically, and then you basically accept my terms at that time. If you're resistant to them, but if you already know that you stand no chance to resistance, then you'll bend anyway. So then I can send my economic hitmen, so to speak, into your country, and we could do our business that way.
Set up shop.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So I'm gonna T. Did you have anything?
Just a question. Has anyone ever heard of a radicalized Christian? Just a question.
Nat Turner. They say he was
radicalized. I'm talking about a modern day.
I don't think that that exists, because at that particular time, Christianity, when it was radicalized, and we talked about it earlier, there was violent resistance through preachers. Denmark Vesey, we do have somebody on from South Carolina. Shout out to South Carolina. And Nat Turner in particular, VA, Southampton, VA, did use Christianity in revolutionary terms. But, of course, there was pushback against that kind of resistance, and a lot of death. And we practiced the only way that we learned how to practice, and that was by making the church into something else, where the revolutionary aspect is not there, and that
I think
the afterlife is here.
I think kind of going off into what I meant by that is, like, right now what we see is we hear radicalized Muslims, right?
But, yep.
But are the people who are over there, let's say a large portion of them are likely practice the Christian faith, but are they called radicalized Christians?
Nah, those people are
white supremacists. I'm just talking about the play on words.
I got you. You're right. Yeah. You're right. But anytime that you have a flag and you have some people that have like military soldiers, in churches, what's that guy's name? Televangelist, Fire and Brimstone, John Hagee. You guys remember him?
Yeah.
That was on TVN from back in the day, kind of like a Fire and Brimstone preacher. Uh-huh. He used to always talk about how the military need to go and stomp out, the demonic Al Qaeda and all this type of stuff. So you got that preached from the pulpit. They call it Christianity, but Christianity now is preaching white supremacy.
Well, I would just say Christianity is really more, I think, probably bottom up than top down now. I think white supremacy, or the European empire, the superpower, is really the religion, and it dictates.
Right.
It seemed like they swapped roles over the last century or so, that where the religion is, and again, secretly it could be anything, obviously. I'm just talking about on the surface. You know, my level of ignorance, who knows what's really going on, but on the surface, it seemed like religion has, specifically Christianity in the Western world, has seemed to have taken somewhat of a back seat, at least on the, like I said, at least on the surface. And it seems like it's something else. I would call it white supremacy, or I would call it the super, the military arm is now deciding how things should and shouldn't be. And they use the words like democracy and capitalism to implement. You know what I'm saying? And it seems like they kind of left religion, to me, on the side a little bit more. You know, people can kind of practice what they want to practice these days, even though clearly we know some of the most practiced religions, some of the larger religions, are still Christianity and Islam. But it just seems like, to me anyway, that they've kind of, it doesn't sound like it's in the forefront as much. And again, like I said, that's just, like I said, just on the surface to me anyway.
What about the pastor that's over the NAACP in North Carolina? Some people will say that he's radical. I forgot his name. What's this pastor's name?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I don't know.
Well, I'm saying
when I hear the word radical, I consider
violence.
I'm more aggressive with something. Like I said, because I think you had mentioned earlier that even us, the code breakers, would be considered whatever, but I'm thinking, and in my mind, words, I guess, has some power, but it just seems like when you're physically doing something, to me, just rings a lot more power when you're willing to put your life on the line. Even though, obviously, I can get the knock at my door right now, and they can come and take me away, obviously. Going against the state, but I'm just making a point that it just seems like, I just think there's levels. I just put it that way. There's levels to it. So,
yeah, I think that the argument would be that you're doing something, and that doing something and being even a dissenter, even if it comes off as passive dissenter, then it is radical in these days, because you are taking a chance, so to speak, even though it may not be through violent demonstrations. I just think that we're not there yet. Okay, Reverend Barber, that's his name. I'm sorry, I had to look that up. More on Monday, Reverend Barber is the gentleman that that I'm thinking about.
I'm gonna tie the
a lot of people would say he's radicalized because he's focused on mistreatment of all people. I don't think that he really focused on the race quota, even though it's focused on race, but sort of like indirectly, he's Christ-centered. You know, I listened to him a couple of times, and I think that he's not, you know, he's more in the vein of the spirituality of the whole thing, the justice quote, and just regardless of, you know, the people and all that. But see, the thing about race and the categories and things of that nature is because people that still believe in the flag and believe in the so-called idea of what America is, to a certain degree, have to believe in the military. You have to believe in, when you go to these airplane shows, you know what these airplanes do, right? You know that they got 50 millimeter, you know, machine guns on them connected, right? The F-15s. I mean, when we was coming up, firefighter, the one with Clint Eastwood, Firebird, Blue Thunder with Ron Snyder. Like, these are war machines. These are instruments of death, and these instruments are not here for show. I mean, you know, we can have fun, we can go to the parade, we can see the, you know, the fireworks and stuff like that, but at the end of it, bombs do burst in air, you know what I'm saying, to know that our flag is still there. So that means people are dying and sacrificing for, you know, what I would deem the empire.
It's real. Let's
racism, real. White supremacy. Yeah, so the idea of trying to extract justice from so much death on the other back end of it, the real end of it, is kind of difficult to grasp, because when you look at it from a different lens, that's what we're looking at. And then, you know, to kind of go deeper to what Mr. Fuller was saying about supreme, I know a lot of people hate that word, because supreme means that if you're supreme, then there's something that's inferior. But you could think of it, you know, sort of like, in a sense of, things have already been done before you got here, so it's not your fault. This is things that took place before any of us on this line or listening even got here. So things were already established, and if you're old enough to remember, you know, desegregation and you know, colored fountains, you know, that's not that long ago. We got people that are still living that remember those times, those days and times where it was just blatant that racism existed, and that doesn't go away because some kind of laws have been enacted. That particular thing pervades itself and kind of hides and is hidden underneath this country, with the biggest sin of building this particular country. Slaves built this country, slaves continue to build this country, and that has never been dealt with. That has never been clearly abolished. So that's the reason why this particular country is still dealing with the injustices that it deals with to this very day.
And it seems like the word race, they define all the words, and they define race as something totally different than what we're even talking about. Which I just wanted to put that out there, which I was thinking about that over the week, is that they've defined what racism is, and what they've decided what's considered racist and what isn't racist. And I think about the definition that Dr. Welsing and Gus, that their own definition of the word race or racism, or even Mr. Fuller. And it's just interesting that when you think about it, white people have already decided what the definition of it is, and most of us pretty much go with that particular definition, which is whatever they decided to be. And I just think that's just an interesting thing, when you get words can get kind of confusing when we're giving them definitions, but then there's already a general definition for that exact same word. I think that can potentially cause a little bit of confusion. But anyway, the last, I want to tie these two together, which is just, you know, did y'all have any comments about just the struggles of living in America specifically, or just in general? And also, If non-white, specifically black people, are suffering, you know, should, or what are your thoughts on black people exploiting those people, taking advantage of those people, or what's the best advice you could potentially give to people, they may not even realize that that's what they're doing. So, you know, because at the end of the day in DC, we talk about it a lot, which is, you know, in the position that we're in, you know, who you getting over on at the end of the day? Are you hustling white people? And right. is that your main goal? Is to get money out of their pockets, out them Jews' pockets, out them Arabs' pockets, out them Indians' pockets, out those Hispanic pockets? Or do you find it just easy to take advantage of your own people? Because the things that you're saying to, if you were saying to somebody else, they look at you like you're crazy. You know, are some of us who are suffering the most suckers? And the reason why I make, not to be disrespectful to anybody who obviously don't have the economics there, but I do know that when you don't have anything, when you don't have anything in a capitalist system, and you know every inch of many people is to try to obtain some sort of finance, you tend to open yourself up and you become very vulnerable. And I mean, I've experienced it. I'm sure most people on this call have experienced where, you know, you need some money, you're vulnerable. You know, you don't want to look at it like that. You want to be a man, you want to be a woman, you want to do X, Y, and Z. But, you know, somebody's talking good to you and the money just comes out of your pocket. And that could be people, the folks at the church, that could be anybody. Now, clearly, white folks are robbing us already.
Can I
be clear on that? But anyway, that's one of the questions, and that I think that question does tie into the struggles in general of just living here, because I think that's one of the biggest struggles is trying to figure out if we're not going to get rid of the system, if we're not going to go and physically fight and go to war against these people like Islam is, are we, if we're going to participate, what would be an approach? This is purely hypothetical, of course, but what would be the approach? Would the pitch be, okay, we're here, we're in it, we're rocking and rolling, you know, we understand it is what it is. Who do we take advantage of? Because it's designed to take advantage of somebody, right?
They're going through the same thing, but I like to kind of tie back into your original question about the trust quotient when you're talking about white people not dealing with black folks, and do they trust us enough? If you don't trust a person that was born of a white mother from Kansas, the non-white person was not born or tied to slavery, but clearly the person was designated to the black race by force, by the history of this particular country. Raised by white grandparents, Yale educated, Harvard educated, married a wife that was Harvard educated. And if you don't trust this particular individual, I don't know what trust you're going to have from someone that's from Southeast DC, Capitol Heights, Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland, you know, Park Heights. I mean, I don't know who you're going to trust if you can't trust this particular person that found their destination under the classification of being a black person. If there was a black person that was going to be president of the United States, that person would be Barack Hussein Obama. You can't make up a better candidate than that. Like, literally. You know what I'm saying? Friends with white people, grew up around white folks his whole life, been around white people. So, you know, that's the tie-in right there. You know, experienced whiteness until, you know, he couldn't be white anymore, being exposed to the outside world, and had to finally, you know, get in touch with his so-called blackness his way. I don't know how you tie into the trust factor when, you know, that particular person is not trusted on a wide scale. I mean, good enough to be represented as president, but I don't think that there was a trust factor when it came down to President Obama, even the people or the so-called white people that worked for him. I mean, I think that they did sabotaging of him also, his message, his ideals, you know, not looking out for him in the best way, not allowing him to help out the group that he's been forced to represent. He is so-called the first African-American president that will be on the books. that will be something that will go down in history. Yeah, that's my deal. I don't think that we understand the grasp of what the system means and what it means to be white. Like what it means to be white, the reason why white people hold on to that whole classification, even. You know, like I said, it's 2017 so called, and people are still calling each other white when that really don't have a definition. I mean, white is more vague than blackness. Blackness has always been somebody to me that's been mixed with African bloodline, Native American bloodline, and European ancestry. That's always been a black person to me. So even somebody like Barack Obama, President Barack Obama still, that's the beginning of blackness. That's where it begins. He just started. He's just the first generation black person. You know what I'm saying? His father wasn't black, but he is. His father is from the tribe, one of the tribes in Africa, from Kenya. I mean, you know, his father falls in, but technically he never experienced blackness in the way that his son did. So it's that kind of tricky history that kind of, you know, colors this situation and the reason why we don't have an agreement on how to solve the system, how to attack it. You know, even if there was a situation where a group of us got together and decided to do things that were anti the system, whether it's something that we're trying to get together to do participation, you know, a boycott, which is a participation tie-in, you know, there's not enough people that believe in the same thing because we have different experiences, different holds into this particular system, which makes it very, very difficult. So, you know, I think that what Mr. Fuller says is very, very important to remember. To stop arguments with other black people, people that are classified as black, victims of racism. You have to allow people to get their suggestions in. Even if you disagree, just disagree with whatever their idea is. Be respectful because you're dealing with another victim of racism, white supremacy, as much as you can be. If there's no kind of physical danger, if you're just exchanging views, even no matter how crazy their view is or you think their view is, it may be crazy what you're saying, just as crazy as what you're saying to this particular person. And both of you guys believe in racism. That has happened. Or you believe that racism exists, but you have different philosophy of how to combat it or how to think about it. So, you know, we understand how difficult it is to get to a place of even just not letting arguments. And I know that people, you know, have seen, you know, things online in the conscious community where we have allowed arguments to kind of take over the message. Are we here to help black people or we're not here to help black people? Or are we here to feed our ego and fill our pockets with money and mistreat those that need help the most? Like, how are we any better than the people that has basically oppressed us for hundreds and hundreds of years? You know, are we trying to end white supremacy or are we trying to live off the mistreatment that white supremacy has shown us how to basically implement so thoroughly? That's some of the things that we need to think about. And this is not judgment, because, you know, there is a responsibility when you have ears, when you have people that listen to you and that trust you because they're vulnerable. You know, there should be some kind of responsibility when that is the case, in my eyes, you know. Because if you're dealing with the people that need help the most, we just need to stop mistreating those people first. They're the most vulnerable of us in our group. You know, the chain is not as strong as the weakest link. So, you know, that's part of it. Regardless of whatever we think, you know, these people ain't me, but that's wrong. That's the wrong way to look at it. Because if we all fall into the classification of black, guess what? When you deal with that white racist or that white race soldier, when they come upon you and they had dealt with you or dealt with our group before, and they have a certain belief system, then they would treat you as such. They don't care that you're a lawyer. They don't care that you're a doctor. They don't care if you're president of the United States. I mean, President Obama had a beer summit with a was he even was he a college cop? Was he even a
don't know
what I'm saying, but what was he even a? He was like a university police, I think. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't even like. I mean, come on now.
Young,
the
too.
President of the United States. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on now. And this is your professor. This is your professor that you're protecting that was mistreated, and they're gonna. Hey, I think it's best for you to go ahead and do this beer summit because you know we're trying to show good face and trying to heal race relations in this country. That's just ridiculous.
I won't say anything else because it will become name calling. So I'm gonna leave it alone.
What kind of beer were they drinking?
Not messing with y'all.
It was real fuzzy, man. It was that dark beer, that dark beer. They were really sipping, man. I'm like, come on.
Stout.
Some stout. Yeah. Oh, it was a German. It was a German beer.
But see, that's going back to DC. That's the seduction of white supremacy. Is that, you know, no matter how much you try to help out your fellow people, it can still be construed as you're not really helping. They can turn it into a session of name calling, and it can. And typically, the thing will be, well, what are you going to do about it? That typically would be the answer. It might not be in those particular words, but that'll be the sentiment. They say, well, you're just talking. You're not doing anything about it. So let me go over here and do my thing, and you do your thing. It becomes divisive in that way. And so I think it would be best to try to find some type of common ground. I mean, even in our suffering, we can't find common ground. And that statement to me says a lot. Is that even if you're, because there's different levels of suffering. You say, well, my suffering is not like yours. And that goes back to the phrase which
you ain't from the hood. You ain't from the hood.
Yeah, destination blackness. You know,
right? You ain't from the hood, for real. You ain't from the hood. What you talking about? You don't know nothing about this, man. We better move around, Playboy. It our disagreements. You know, where you have somebody that's so called respected in the so-called conscious community, and I think everybody that listened would know who I'm talking about. But I respect this man. I respect the man that he was even talking to. Well, sometimes, you know, they veer off and get into ego, but there are some constructive things that are said, but people get confused because we pay attention to personality more so than how the message can be constructive and how the message can work for black people as a whole, or even work for me as a black person that's within the system, and what can I do to help. But if you get caught up into the dogma of it all and the personality, then, you know, we backtrack, and then we go back into name calling, and then name calling becomes, you know, what we do throughout the day. I mean, these are not debates that people are having. These are debates to see who can name call the best. I mean, it's just this don't become about ridding ourselves of the system of racism, white supremacy. We're not serious about doing that yet. We still are in the process of getting to a point where we need to get sick and tired, and maybe it needs to extend to a point where it become more brutal. And I think as the economic system collapse on white people, when it becomes a little bit more brutal for us, then it becomes more prevalent because we are deemed the group that's supposed to be mistreated the most. So then we're going to fill it double fold. So if the jobs tighten up, then, you know, of course, you know, black people are going to be the last to be hired at, and we're going to feel the full effect of that. Or, you know, if the economy starts to shorten up, then those groups that deal with each other already are going to be even more constricted. And the groups of people are going to isolate themselves and be more with their own group. You know, maybe that needs to happen for us to get the picture that, you know, racism, white supremacy is something that is, you know, it's a group phenomenon, and that for us to try to get into the right mindset of trying to combat this system, maybe that's what needs to take place.
All right, well, this is the Code Breakers. We can be reached, or you can see us on blacktalkradionetwork.com. Go to Code Breakers. Definitely download our podcast. We are live every first and third Tuesdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. You can always obviously reach us at 1-866-510-9025. You want to call in to the program. We can also be reached on, I believe, what are we, Code Breakers 191 on Twitter, Code Breakers underscore 1865 on Instagram. You can obviously find us on Facebook and YouTube as well under Black Talk Radio. I think you can also email us at codebreakers1999@gmail.com. And if you want to, you had any questions or concerns, hit us up on any of the social media stuff, and we can
Hit us up and let us know if you have any disagreements about what we said, or if we off track, or you know, you have any ideas about you know, how to get the information out better. I mean, we all up for improvement. I mean, we're just trying to help out and, you know, give our little bit as much as possible, share our views on what the system of racism is and how we view it. And hopefully, you know, it's all about breaking code at the end of the day.
That's right. We appreciate our callers from Jersey and from South Carolina as well, hanging in with us.
Absolutely.
But you are right about that. Definitely let us know. Recommend some books to us. Send us some links. I'm always looking to learn and get a better understanding. In 2017, definitely want to spend more time talking about military strategy, if we can. If there's a room for that conversation, I hope going forward. Do y'all have any thoughts as far as just going into this year, as far as maybe around some of the I know I'm catching you off guard on that, but just around some of the things y'all want to discuss going forward.
Yeah, just be careful on who you listen to and who you paying attention to out here in the. In the conscious community in the center, just make sure that whatever information that you're listening to, that is constructive at the end of the day. You know, information over personality, and if the information that you're listening to, is it helping to you know, constructively neutralize or bring an end to racism, white supremacy, very, very important. So, you know, if you want, we're gonna get into the Dr. Wellesen clip.
Yep.
All right.
This is the Code Breakers.
This is D.
E.
And Paradox.
And until next time, peace.
I encourage people to have confidence in themselves. In other words, clearly, you have a lot of ideas about what needs to be done. And believe in yourself and have confidence. Well, I'm going to share, you know, I'm going to develop these ideas. I'm going to share these ideas with the people that are in my community, or the people that I want to work with. And I say every black person has to see him or herself as a leader. It's not one person or two people who are the leaders. Every person needs to say, I'm a leader, and therefore I have to understand what our problem as a collective is. And I'm going to use my intelligence and my creativity to help impact the lives of other people against the problem that we have with racism, white supremacy. As I said earlier, you know, I used to say every black person should get a PhD in broom studies. See, if black people decided for the next 5 years, it's not going to be any trash, any broken glass, any bottles on the street in the areas where black people live. If black people just said that one thing, is going to be no trash on the street. And everybody did their part in broom studies. It would have a profound effect on the way that black people think about themselves. It's just like, you know, there's some neighborhoods that you can go in and you don't expect to see any trash or any paper or any bottles in the gutter. You know, you know, oh wow, look, that would be something that would be so unusual, it would be the basis of comedy. But come into an area where we as black people are, and the expectation is that the gutters are supposed to be clean and there's supposed to be trash all around, trash around the stores, trash around the houses. Well, black people, by just focusing on that, or a small group of black people in a community talking about that, could have a profound impact on countering racism, because it would be countering the system of racism's attempt to demean black people, and black people countering the attempt to demean and to degrade with their positive images about themselves as black people. And so therefore their surrounding environment looks in a particular way versus another way.